unfortunately, I won't be there, but four or five of the board will be attending that. Measurement is obviously very critical in accounting. It's also very undeveloped. Most of the measurement techniques have just sort of developed, grown as practice has led them there. The conceptual frameworks, both of the United States and of the ISB, more descriptions of measurement bases than actually telling you what to do. It certainly doesn't help us as standard setters to pick the appropriate measurement attribute for any particular situation. So the objective of this particular session, as of the others, is to help us fill this gap and to help us eventually to move on with standard setting. What we're doing this time around, which we don't normally do, is to seek your views before we put out any preliminary views. We haven't got any preliminary views at the moment, and the idea is if we can get your views before we start. This is more a brainstorming type of session. We're not going to try and restrict what you do. We have a few questions at the back. But previously, we've just made assessments of what seems to be sensible and taking account what we think users would want. We're trying to do this more formally nowadays. And when you see the coloured balance sheet that Kevin will show you in a minute or two, you can see the mixture of different values that we've had. I used to say it would be very helpful if we actually took the deferred tax figure, the provision for pensions and the goodwill figure and netted them together. And then we'd only have one damn silly answer in the balance sheet instead of three. But these are areas we're going to have to look at, all the various measures and how we can reduce them to just a few. We're going through a sort of three sections in the conceptual framework, and I'm going to ask Kevin to briefly describe them to you, and then we'll get underway.
Thank you. I'm told that each session that I go through this, I'm taking less and less time. That's good news for those of you who have stayed all day, but I hope you have a crossword puzzle or something, even though I'm going to take less time. I want to go through these, not because you can't read them yourself, but I want to give you a little insight into the motivation of the staff and what we're thinking about as we're doing this. You will notice that we've divided the measurement phase of the conceptual framework project into three parts that we're calling milestones. This isn't something that's necessarily usually done, but we thought it was a prudent thing to do for a couple of reasons. One, unlike some of the other phases of the project, we're not just looking at convergence and cross-cutting issues with the two boards. We're filling an immense hole in the existing frameworks in regards to measurement. So to make this a little more manageable, we want to cut it up into parts. Also, there are some controversies and difficult issues to handle, and we don't want to do them all at once. So it's a matter of doing it step by step and hoping that it's more manageable for everyone. You'll notice that we have listed for you the issues that we have come up with for the boards to consider. There will be more detail in these as we go along, but this is what we have for the time being. We're in the first milestone, and this is where we're trying to identify measurement bases before we get into the more critical issues. And the and most of the work that you see in the other attachments does relate to the issues in the first milestone. When we go into the second milestone, our intention is to evaluate the bases from the first milestone using primarily the qualitative characteristics of decision useful information, which are discussed in the preliminary views document for the conceptual framework that's now out for your consideration. In addition, we're going to consider some other criteria as well, including but not necessarily limited to revisiting the question of capital maintenance concepts and looking at measurement concepts from the point of view of the scientific community so that we can see if that will give us some help in deciding where we should go and whether or not we can determine what constitutes a good measurement basis from that point of view. When we go into the third milestone as it's currently planned, then we have some difficult questions to answer. At that time, we hope we can draw some conclusions from what we've done and what the boards have decided, and answer questions such as, should we use just one measurement basis for all assets and liabilities on a balance sheet? Or should we use a multiple basis model, albeit one that would be an improvement over what we currently use? Also, although this is a conceptual project, we think it would be important at this stage for the staff and the boards to consider some practical implications of the decisions made at that point. Whether one basis or multiple bases are chosen, there are likely to be practical problems to consider. Not that we intend to go as far in this consideration as would be done in a standards project, but we think that we should nevertheless address some of the practical problems of what the boards decide on. In the second attachment, you can see what the staff has come up with in the way of measurement bases to date. In the first column, we have the measurement bases according to terminology that we worked out as staff when we saw, after a short time, that there was a communication problem. Not just among the staff and in our board meetings, but in the literature and in various meetings of constituents that we've attended, we have seen problems in that there are often several terms used to describe what in effect is one measurement basis. On the other hand, sometimes multiple measurement bases are described by the same term. And when we're trying to argue the fine points of things like measurement bases, this makes it very difficult to do a good job, and people tend to talk past each other. So at least for the duration of the conceptual framework, we think we need to select somewhat different terminology, and that's what we've done in the first column. After the definitions in the second column, then we have taken current terms and put them in the third column. And you can see in some of the subsequent pages that there are cases where there are numerous instances of current terminology used to describe what is one thing. In the third attachment, we wanted to look at two properties that we thought were important after doing a little review of basic economics. We decided that most economic decisions involve the use of prices and values, and that therefore we ought to see if the measurement basis candidates are prices or values, or if they're either one at all. And so in the first two columns, we've tried to indicate that for each basis. We also think it's important to consider the basic time orientation of a measurement basis. By this, we don't necessarily mean the orientation of the inputs to the measurement basis. There are some measurement bases in which past, current, and forecasts of the future are used all in one. But despite that, each measurement basis tends to focus on the past, the present, or the future. And we think that by looking at price, value, and time orientation, this will help us as we go on to evaluate the bases in the second milestone. In attachments 4 and 5, we've done the same thing with different information. We took sample IFRS and US GAAP statements and just used the accounts, no numbers, and then wanted to see where we are currently in terms of the measurement bases that we identified in the first attachment. And then we've referenced them to various standards. We don't claim that this is entirely accurate. The staff does not entirely agree on this, and the board members that have consulted with us don't necessarily agree either, but that's not the important point. The point is that we can see that we are using numerous bases for identical kinds of assets and liabilities. In the last attachment, which David mentioned, and the one that was sent to you in color by email, and I made a very bright copy for myself, we've basically taken a sample IFRS statement similar to attachment 4, not identical, and tried to show the same thing on one page to get the impact of what we currently have now. I see at least three things when I look at this carefully. One is that there are measurement bases that have been proposed that have many proponents, in fact, and have been in the accounting literature for some time, that are not represented here. Secondly, it occurs to me that the way in which we have framed past measurement debates, that is in terms of historic cost versus current value, or historic cost now versus fair value, grossly oversimplifies the situation that we're faced with. Even though some have said that many of these measurement bases we've identified could be put into families, we still think that there are just differences between them, sometimes significant, and therefore it really is a more complex situation than just saying historic cost versus fair value, even though that's a convenient shortcut way to speak about it. Thirdly, this is a conceptual project, not a standard-setting project. It is there to help the boards in their standard setting, but it is conceptual. And we think that this is undue complexity in measurement bases, and that from a conceptual viewpoint, even if the board should decide on a multiple basis model, it should be something simpler than this. And with that, I'll turn the time back to Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. As Kevin has obviously demonstrated, we have very much a mixed measurement system. Very few people seem to be arguing for fair value for everything. Similarly, very few seem to be arguing for historical cost for everything. We're accused of being obsessed with fair value. One of the big four in one of its recent publications stated that the valuation approach that IASB has embraced is rapidly introducing fair value as the primary basis for asset liability measurement. This means that financial reporting under IFRS largely involves a process of asset liability recognition, initial measurement at fair value, remeasurement again, largely at fair value, and derecognition. That is completely untrue. I'll not mention which one it was to protect the guilty, but basically, we are not introducing fair value into everything. A lot of what we've done reflects long-standing practice. In fact, most of it we inherited from IASC. And probably the thing that upset most people was IAS 39, which again we inherited. And even then, not everything in IAS 39 is at fair value. We only require fair value in four situations. Initial measurement of transactions, which is usually cost, but it's also fair value. When we have acquisition accounting and we have to break up the transaction into the various fair values of the assets we acquire and liabilities too. For recoverable amounts of assets, the impairment tests, and for subsequent measurement, where it is mandatory for derivatives, held for trading financial assets and liabilities, available for sale financial assets, and certain agricultural products. For all other assets, historical costs can be used, and most companies reporting do use it. We don't allow fair value in certain situations for intangibles, inventory, goodwill, most liabilities, and even shares where the values are unreliable in certain situations. We have introduced fair value for the fair value option, note option. IFRS 1, if you couldn't calculate the cost properly. Two of our convergence projects, IFRS 2 and IFRS 5, which the first being the grant date value of the share option, and in number 5, the value of non-current assets held for sale, both American practice. So we're looking at whether we can simplify. Can we make it one value measure, or if we can't, which ones do we have and when do we use them? So that's basically what's this about. You'll notice the motto of the English Institute, the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales, is recte numerari, get the numbers right. In Scotland, of course, the older institutes, we're much more principle-based. Our motto is quare verum, seek the truth. And when we find it, the president's promised to change the motto to Eureka. But we're not there yet, but we're looking forward to you to tell us what the truth will be in the next couple of hours, and then we can move forward from there. Who's first?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mark Hughes from University of Canberra.
Mentioned cricket, are you?
Only if I disagree with something you say. Okay, thanks a lot for letting me come to this and contribute. I think it's important. Just got a couple of issues that I want to talk about or raise. I don't know if anyone else wants to address them. Just from the previous conversations I've heard in here, I've been very happy that a lot of people have spoken about this measurement issue in terms of user decision-making model, the objective of the framework, so I'm really happy with that. I think that's the right way to approach it. That's got problems in its own right, of course, but it's a good starting point. This is, as you said, a conceptual discussion, so the first question is whether we need multiple measurement bases or a single measurement base, and some of the documents that have come out lately have put up both arguments. The conceptual framework at the moment defines assets or describes assets as giving benefits through two major paths, value in use and sale or resale. So it seems to me unless we change that, we will have multiple measurement bases. So how many we have, I don't know. To be honest, I thought the multicoloured balance sheet, this is going to sound horrible, slightly overstated it, because I thought a lot of the bases were essentially almost the same, except for, well, they were very close anyway. Sorry. So I thought there is a number of bases, whether we've got as many as that, that have a real-world impact as that diagram implied, I'm not so sure about. A number of people have talked about the need for increased disclosures when they go in through these different measurement bases. My problem with this is I don't believe, and this is a personal belief, I don't believe that anyone really understands all the disclosures that are applicable across all the industries of what we have already. And maybe one day you'd want to do a show of hands about someone who's confident enough to put up their hand and say, I understand all disclosures that we've currently got across all the industries. Analysts will understand them or should understand them for their industry, but for other industries. And if we don't, and we're supposed to be at the better end of town, we're not mum and dad retail investors, is it a good thing, is it a good path to go down to just keep increasing more and more disclosures, or are we obfuscating the problem, we're making it worse? That's just a thought. Last thing I'm particularly concerned about, some of the discussions that happened earlier, a number of people have talked about using entity-specific information for their financial assets and all sorts of other assets. When I hear that, I'm just constantly reminded of Jeff Skilling's tongue-in-cheek comment about hypothetical future value. There are good people out there, and there are good standards, and bad people will destroy a good standard, but a bad standard is going to really open itself up to abuse by bad people, if you like. So that's my two cents.
What about the third cent? What's your answer, Mark?
The answer. I was actually going to put that in my first comment. I think you've really opened yourself up for a right popper kicking, even more so than the Australian cricket team. I really wish you well.
Cancelled.
Thank you.
You did. I think you're great for having a go at trying to sort this out, because it's a huge issue.
Other points? Ian?
Hi, and thank you, David, to all of you to invite us. I sort of perceive that we may be seeing more of each other, because I can see two or three of these events as the thinking starts to develop, so obviously the first taster. I guess I'm sort of wondering how our world is changing. We can see that we've got things like web-based reporting starting to come along, and one of the things that therefore it sort of strikes me is that maybe now is a good moment to think about what's the purpose of primary statements. Because I certainly hear from investors that they can happily have information, whether or not it's on the balance sheet or whether it's in the notes. And so do we really understand which are the user groups that are actually using this? And perhaps that makes a difference at the end of the day to how you decide to do recognition and measurement. Certainly from investors who I guess I'm seeing a bit more of, particularly my friend on the right over recent months, they seem to have two challenges, one of which is the sort of what I might call the two-month exercise of really deep and depth analysis of companies, and the other one is the 30-minute exercise, the 6:30 in the morning, bleary-eyed, looking at a press release and trying to work out how to guide the market on it. And it does seem to me that the primary statement, particularly the performance statement, is the one that is most in mind at that moment in time. And so I guess the question that I would encourage you to start with is, do we really know which users are making use of it at that moment in time? And how could we better connect through what we do at this moment, the people who've got money and are searching for information to know how to invest it, and the people who want money and are looking to see how they're putting up information. Now, I guess my experience of the world has led me to many different groups of users, and so I guess my answer is going to be you're going to end up with multiple different sorts of bases to help those communications. In about 4 years of my life, I spent looking after the Central Electricity Generating Board, and they had a public sector role of providing electricity, and they wanted to demonstrate through their accounts that they were charging today's users with the replacement cost of their capacity. And therefore, they quite clearly had all assets and liabilities on modern equivalent asset. And David, you may remember SAP 16. I don't know whether you had any hand in it at the time. But actually, it was a model which absolutely suited that purpose, and for really probably about 15 or 20 years was the model which they believed was actually doing the thing for them. By comparison, if I went and talked to an investment bank today, I'd know that they perceive themselves as traders, they want to fair value everything, and indeed they find it frustrating that we can't facilitate that. And then my other life, which was I originally designed motor cars, if I went and talked to an automotive manufacturer and tried to explain their business and their performance, I certainly wouldn't be trying to use the fair value of their plants and equipment to communicate that. So just in three examples, it seems to me one could demonstrate that there is no single answer for this. So really the question to me is, how can I best use this format of income statements and balance sheet to facilitate future communications? Like the rest of us, I don't have perfect answers, but if we could persuade investors and preparers to actually really find out which is the best model for which purpose, what is the key pieces of information, how do we support them appearing in financial statements so that we could make financial statements more useful? So you may have also heard me on the subject of complexity. From time to time, you'll read some articles, and I would really love to see us narrow this down. Perhaps there's only four measurement bases that we actually need to try and facilitate that. We're internal and external and cost and fair value. You know, perhaps there's a relatively few number that we could focus on. The board's recently produced your fair value document, and I think that's a good contribution. Maybe we need a cost document, and maybe we need something that looks at internal and external to try and narrow down what we can pick from. So that would be my suggested direction.
Ian. Sylvie?
Thank you.
I want to speak. Could you just put your name plate up so we'll just pick you up from there. So thank you.
Thank you. First of all, we very much welcome the opportunity to exchange views on those very important subjects. And although we do not have a complete view of the final draft framework at this stage, but still it's very important that we can have this exchange of view on measurement. I would say, like Jan just mentioned it, the objective of the financial statement is a very important issue and maybe something that we should consider before looking in detail at measurement methods. I would also agree with Jan that there might be only one answer to the most of the questions which are raising here. And as representative of the Basel Committee, I guess we certainly be in a position that there may not be only one measurement choice for everything. That does not mean that we don't like fair value. I mean, for banking supervisors, we've been accepted fair value for a long time. As soon as it is in line with the bank strategy and as soon as it covers items which are actively traded and for which you can have real market price or fair price. We've been working with that for years now, and we really have no problem with it. We accept it, go to the profit and loss, and then to the capital, which is a very important issue for us and for banks. However, we don't feel that it should be the appropriate solution for everything, even for financial instrument. If it is not in line with the strategies, it may not be relevant. And if you don't have a real market price, or if you can estimate with a good degree of reliability the fair value price, then we have a reliability issue. We noticed that you quoted very much comparability in the document which have been circulated. And of course, comparability is important, and we acknowledge that the mixed model has some drawbacks regarding comparability. Still, we think that relevance and reliability is very, very important for understanding the financial statement. So Jan also mentioned complexity, and I guess as soon as we go in some measurement or entity-specific measurement, we have another issue which is, I think, very important, is that whether those numbers are really auditable for the auditors, and whether we don't go into ranges where it is too much complex so that we can really explain what is a real situation and whether it is difficult for auditors to audit those numbers. That was the first comment.
Sylvie. I've now got Robert, Ian, Neil, Svetlana, and Andrew. So Robert first.
Thank you. I didn't want to jump in too quickly, being from the ICAW, since it might give the impression that I'd been irritated by your comment. But actually, it was a wonderful feeder line, because it actually illustrates the point I'd like to make. You might be aware, since you were kind enough to put it on the ISB and FASB websites, that we've recently, the Institute published a paper on measurement. And we actually think that this is better seen more as an issue of trying to perform right counting for different sorts of people rather than trying to determine a single form of truth. And I think these debates can become unnecessarily ideological and unproductive if people see it as a search for the truth. Maybe it's a variety of truths that suit different situations. So I think our view is that it's quite likely that you would have different bases, not just for the reasons that people have said, but the sort of corollary of saying we'll have one basis is that all these other tools, whether there's 18 of them or four of them on our model, you're actually consigning to the scrap heap, and that looks like a rather silly way of having flexibility as a regulator going forward. You're sort of throwing most of the clubs out of your golf bag and saying, you know, just because the putter might be the best one, we'll try and play the whole round with that. And that seems unnecessarily constraining as a regulatory approach. It's almost a commonplace to say that one size doesn't fit all. So why would you want to do that? And I suppose the view that as a standard-setting body engaged in a regulatory activity, the way of going about making decisions about this is not trying to find the theoretically best way of doing things, but it's to think of what works, and in particular to make changes when you think there is a problem. And I might just challenge a little bit the comments that Kevin made about, you know, the perception of the problem is that we have a chart which has too many colours on it, or we have standards which, from the standard setter's point of view, look sort of aesthetically unsatisfying because there are different ways of measuring things. Well, actually, if you were to ask users of your standards what are the things which they see as problems, they might not say that this sort of aesthetic clumsiness of the model was the biggest problem. People probably get used pragmatically to accounting for things in different ways, and they might find it an illuminating reflection that actually we do things in odd sorts of ways, but it's not necessarily a big problem. And I have to say that in looking at the paper, it does seem to me, and I know because we went through this exercise in drafting our own paper, that looking at the 19 bases, and arguably there are more, actually they're inputs into fairly complex decision rules, and we shouldn't underestimate just how complex and subtle some of the ways of making decisions are. Actually, very few things are computed on a pure basis, because even if it ends up that colour in your chart, there have been decisions along the way that you won't go another colour for various reasons. So I think that it might be unhelpful to paint this picture of complexity which might not accord with how people see things. One final observation, I've been talking quite a bit about process and good regulatory practice. I think it would be useful, whilst taking the point that this is not a standard setting exercise, to nevertheless make sure that in that process that you outline, which is very useful to map it out for us, that it's clear where we're going to be gathering evidence and perhaps commissioning original research, because in evaluating the extent to which different bases measure up to the qualitative characteristics, these are empirical questions about the benefits, and it seems to me that there should be a good process of engagement with people who actually use different bases to work out what they think are the drawbacks and advantages of different bases. So a few thoughts, and thank you for the setup line there. It was very helpful. We don't see this as a quest for the truth, because that becomes perhaps unnecessarily ideological. We are quite pragmatic people as accountants, both north and south of the border and in the rest of the world. Thank you.